Okay, dear Dhamma friends, so hope you can hear me. And we are discussing Kaggavisana Sutta as our theme for the Dhamma sermon. And Kaggavisana Sutta is available in Suttanipata, which is available in the Kuddaka Nikaya. And basically, this is preached to Venerable Ananda by the Buddha. And the commentators mentioned that this is basically containing several verses, many verses actually, and each one is a kind of a reason for a previous Paccheka Buddha to attain the full enlightenment. So as you know, there are three stages in the, or we can say kind of three varieties in a way. So the Paccheka Buddha is in the middle. So Samma Sambuddha is the fully enlightened Buddha who is through his knowledge, he attained the Buddhahood and is capable of preaching the Dhamma so that many others also attain the same amount of qualification, or they are also able to attain the enlightenment by following the path preached by the Samma Sambuddha. And the Paccheka Buddha also self-enlightened, but he is not capable of preaching Dhamma to the level that someone else is capable of understanding it. So to become enlightened. So to that amount, preaching is not available with the Paccheka Buddha. And the other ones are called the Savaka Buddha, that is the disciples of the Samma Sambuddha. So they actually listen Dhamma from the Samma Sambuddha and then they practice themselves. And also some are capable of preaching others so that others also are able to realize the Dhamma. So these are the three kinds of attainments or the Buddhahood that they mention in the Dhamma. Now these verses are attributed to the Paccheka Buddhas who privately, due to some reason, they attain full enlightenment. Full enlightenment. So we have discussed several verses so far, and today I hope to discuss the next verse, and this is going like this. Migo aranyam hi yatha abaddo yenichchakam gacchati gocharaya vinyu naro seritam pekkhamano eko chare khagga visana kappo. So if we translate it to English, it goes like this. As a deer unbound in the forest goes off to graze wherever it wants, so a wise person looking out for freedom should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So this is the theme of another Paccheka Buddha who attained full enlightenment. So this story is actually comes in the commentary to the Suttanipata. And there is one king, and he actually get to know about one of another Paccheka Buddha, and this particular king thought that Paccheka Buddha is little not happy with him. He basically presumed that particular Paccheka Buddha is not happy with him. He is somewhat angry with him, and he want to clarify that doubt. So what he did was he is going with his army, all his companions, to the Paccheka Buddha's, to the monastery. So as he approached the monastery, that residing Paccheka Buddha understood that this particular king is approaching him. So what he did was he sort of cleaned the garden, and he cleaned the walking path, and he cleaned the temple. And again, he kept some steps in the walking path, so that when the king approaches, he can recognize where he is, where this Paccheka Buddha resides. So, and then again, he kept few steps so that the king may be able to recognize where he is going to reside. Now, what happens? Now, as the king approaches with his the great army to the monastery, so he felt that I better go alone rather than with these many people. So I should at least now go alone, because everywhere when I am going with this retinue, all these armies, So I feel a little disturbed. I feel that I am a little burdened. Let me go alone. So this is a kind of a feeling came to the king's mind, because as you know, even today, say, whenever someone is holding a very high position, he's not sometimes going alone. He has maybe his bodyguards, he has a lot of his companions, ministers, and so many people are around him. So he can't dwell alone. He can't go any other place alone. So that is kind of a problem that a higher ranking person is having. So this king now little understood that, and he felt, so let me go alone to meet this Paccheka Buddha. Now he is going alone to the temple where this Paccheka Buddha is residing, and he recognized the footsteps of the Paccheka Buddha where he kept in the walking path, and through that he understood, okay, where he is residing, and he is now approaching there. And once he is there, he got inside the temple, but he couldn't find out the Paccheka Buddha. But he felt some sort of aloneness, some seclusion while being there. You know, it is a simple dwelling place and there is no any other person there. There are no any bodyguards. There are no any armies. No one is there. So for the first time, now the king was able to be alone. So he now understands there is some sort of freedom by being alone, maintaining seclusion, maintaining solitude. So there are three categories that Buddha mentioned in the aloneness or the seclusion, solitude. The first one is called Kaya Viveka, where one is going away from others and having some sort of solitude. No one is bothering you now. So you are having your own dwelling. There is no one near to you. And you are having some sort of aloneness. So this is a kind of a positive atmosphere coming in the mind. Because sometimes being with the people every time is very difficult. So the next verse also telling the same thing. We'll go to that as well. So in this point, so this king understood this. I am feeling some sort of a freedom by being alone. So now he is simply residing at the temple of that particular Paccheka Buddha. Now the king is reflecting. Now there is a freedom by being alone. There is no one to bother me. So I am like a deer now. I can go anywhere I like. So I am not bound to anything. I am not bound to anyone. There is no one coming and asking me to settle a kind of a dispute, settle kind of a rebellion, settle kind of any kind of an issue. Because as you know, being a king, so he may have a lot of responsibilities, a lot of issues. But now, while being at the place of that Paccheka Buddha, he feel fairly comfortable. Probably you also might have recognized this. Suppose you are spending a very busy life, and time to time, suppose you are going to a remote monastery, or you are going to a, say, kind of a forest, or you are going to a, say, some kind of a park, garden, and you simply sit alone and you feel something comfortable, and you feel that you are sort of confident, you feel that you are relaxed, there is no tension, there is no any kind of burden thinking to attend to this thing, that thing, any of those. So you feel some sort of comfortable feeling while being alone. So this king also recognized it. He also appreciated it. And that leads him to calm down his mind. And that leads him to arouse concentration. So his mind become concentrated. And using that concentration, he was able to develop vipassana, and he attained Paccheka Buddhahood. Now this king is now the Paccheka Buddha. Now his army and the other people came in search of him because they want to go back along with the king. And they come and ask, let's go to the kingdom. Let's go to the palace. Now the king is refusing. Now he is not a king, but he is a Paccheka Buddha. And now he is telling me, I'm not going to come with you. Being with you is a trouble. Being with you is a burden. I don't have any freedom to go alone wherever I like while being with you. I reflected that same thing. And that caused me to become or attain Paccheka Buddhahood. So therefore, he is mentioning this freedom to go wherever he like is something that he admired, he appreciated, and using which that he is able to arouse piti, rapture in his mind, and using which he is able to develop concentration and wisdom, and he attained Paccheka Buddhahood. Now, something similar is available in the other suttas. In the certain suttas, Buddha mentioned this quality that the monks may enjoy. You know, certain monks, that they don't dwell in a particular monastery or particular temple for a long time. They do going from one monastery to another monastery. And there is a austere practice also called Abbokasikanga, where one is dwelling in an open ground, not associating any kind of a kuti, not associating a particular temple, staying only one night at a shelter, and the next day you are going to another place. So likewise, it's a kind of a solitary practice, Dutanga practice, austere practice, certain monks are undertaking. And even, even one is spending Vassa period at a particular monastery. So at the end of the Vassa, that they leave that place and go into another place. So there is another beautiful incident happened during the Buddha's time. And there were several monks from the Magadha, and another group of monks from the Kosala, another group of monks from the Vajji. So all of them actually settled in a particular forest and they were practicing diligently. And the many celestial beings were there and they were quite happy by looking at these diligent monks. They are with good companionship and they are practicing well. And now they reach the end of the Vassa. And at the end of the Vassa, they all have gone. Now the next day, as one celestial being, a Deva, he noticed empty huts, empty dwelling place, no monks are there. Now he felt a little unhappy because he actually was quite happy seeing these diligent monks. And he is now a little sad seeing that empty huts, nobody is there. So these monks were diligently practicing and he also was rejoicing, using rejoice that he has also able to accumulate a lot of merits. But now everything has gone. Everything has finished. Everything become empty. Now he is talking about this with a kind of a desperate mind, sorrowful mind, to another celestial being. So the other celestial being is aware of this custom. So they know that monks gather in a particular dwelling place together only for 3 months to spend the Vassa. And at the end of the Vassa, they go away again. So they are going to other different places. They don't dwell at that same place. And he is aware. So he is answering the previous Deva with this verse. Because this is available in the Devata Samyutta. So there he mentioned Magadangata Kosalangata Ekachyapana Vajji Bhumiya. So that means some have gone to the Magadha, some have gone to the Kosala, and some have gone to the Vajji. So those are the ancient cities in the ancient India. And Migaviya Asanga Charino Aniketa Viharanti Bhikkhavo. So now he is telling a very beautiful quality. Migaviya Asanga Charino, like the deers going from one forest to another forest without having any kind of an attachment to a particular forest, to a particular dwelling place, like a group of deers going from one forest to another forest. Aniketa Viharanti Bhikkhavo. So these bhikkhus, the disciples of the Buddha, they actually dwell without a home, without a permanent home. Now this is actually going against the typical notion that typically people are thinking, lay people are thinking, even the monks are thinking, that they need to have a permanent place. They need to have a permanent monastery. They need to have a permanent temple. And for a long time, till the death, they have to reside there. But on the opposite, this Deva and the Buddha in certain places mentioned that his disciples are not attached to a particular dwelling place. So they should have some sort of freedom in their mind to leave whatever the dwelling place and to go to another place. So if you are staying in a particular place for a long time, you start to bind up with a lot of, burdens, a lot of responsibilities. So that can sometimes become harmful to your practice. So you have to attend to various things. So same approach is there, or same theme is mentioned in the next verse. And we take this verse as well. So there it is mentioned, Amantana hoti sahaya manji. Vase thane gamane charikaya. Anabichitam seditam pekkamano eko chare kagga visana kappu. This is also a very beautiful verse. Amantana hoti sahaya manji. So this is something that we all experience. What it tells is, you are being addressed at any different places, many different places. Suppose you are the father or you are the mother. Suppose you have many children. And while walking, you are being addressed. And while sitting, you are being addressed. While traveling, you are being addressed. Suppose you are reading a book, you are being addressed. While sleeping, again, you are being awakened to attend to something. Say, while at the office, you are giving a call. Nowadays, we have all these various gadgets so that you can't have a peace of mind. So you never know when you are getting a WhatsApp message, when you are getting a Viber message, when you are getting Facebook message, when you are getting some email, when you are getting a phone call. So many, many messages are there. Many, many addressing techniques are there. And you never have peace of mind, because every time people are bugging you, every time people are disturbing you, and you are keeping your hand phone with you, and you never know when it is going to ring. You never know when it is going to have a new message, new email. So when the office is asking you to come, when your wife is asking you to come, when your children are asking you to come, when your husband is asking you to come, when your friends are asking you to come. So this particular king, he also a king. So he is called Brahmadatta, and he's with a soft mind. So the person who actually recognized this issue, so he is called King Brahmadatta. He is a soft character. So being a soft character, he actually listened to many people. So many actually consider him like a mother that always is approachable. So many are approaching him, and they are asking many questions. So please give me this solution, please give me that solution, please give me an increment, please give me a particular village, please give me a promotion. So being the king, now many are asking, many things are there. Now even today, the governments are facing the same thing. Say, assume that you are a minister, you are the president, you are the CEO. So many are asking. And you don't have peace of mind, because while traveling, people are calling. While sitting, people are calling. And while taking a rest, people are calling. While taking your dinner, people are calling. While taking your other meals, people are calling. And even while at the toilet, maybe people are calling. So this is the situation. So, Amantana hoti sahaya manje. Vase thane gamane charikaya. One is addressed in the midst of companions, whether resting, standing, going, or traveling. Anabichitam seritam pekkamano eko chare kagga visana kappu. Looking out for the freedom that is not coveted, one should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So this king, this particular king, understood the burden by being addressed like this, always bugging, always addressing, always called, always a chat message, always a message. So I am combining this with today's situation. So this disturbance, this particular king understood as a burden. So actually he understood this and he actually given up the kingship and he became a monk. But still ministers still want to have more region. Because, you know, when the king leaves the palace, so all others are now fighting to get the large part. They want to get the best part. They want to get the higher region. So they are again quarreling. So the king was further sort of disenchanted by seeing these people's greediness. Because even if you give something to the people, still they are not happy. Even today, if you look at Sri Lankan situation, so one group is asking an increment. Say to nowadays, nurses are strike. Now the PHIs are going to strike. Doctors are threatening that they are going to strike. So all are asking, but they don't know, they don't much care about their duties. They are always asking. So whoever doing the government, so they have to always listen to all these grievances, all these requests. So many are asking. So when you are satisfying one group, another group is not happy. Now they start to quarrel. They start to strike. So they are also asking. So and then you satisfy them, another group start to ask. This is a kind of a continuous ongoing process. Now this king recognized that. And he become disgusted about this greedy nature of the people. They can never be satisfied. Even if you give a lot of money, even if you give a lot of increment, even if you give your attention to them, still they are not satisfied. So they are never going to satisfy. So this particular king, so he very well understood this greedy nature of the human mind. So reflecting that these people can never be satisfied, so he become sort of dispassionate about this kingship. So then he totally given up the kingship. He actually became a monk, and then he reflecting this greediness, this craving prevailing in the or predominant in the human mind. So he actually developed Vipassana and he attained Paccheka Buddhahood. So both actually verses are fairly going very much closer theme. In the first one, actually one has seen that the by being attached to something and having many responsibilities, then one has lost his freedom to travel freely, that you are bound to many things. So you don't have a freedom to travel as you like. And on the other one, he understood that everywhere you are being bugged, you are being addressed, you are being disturbed, you are being sort of troubled by many, many issues from many, many different people. And it may be your relatives, it may be your children, it may be your wife, husband, friends, and your colleagues, and whoever the other professionals who are talking with you, dealing with you, and your customers, whoever it is. And you are being always disturbed because of this addressing. So both scenarios are showing what are the difficulties that one may having when he is looking or searching for a seclusion. Because having kind of a solitude is something that all of us are needed. Kind of a peace of mind. Time to time having some sort of a seclusion so that we can have a good introspection. One can have a good understanding about one's own situation. One may have some understanding about one's mentality. How my mind is working now. And in order to do that, you need some amount of seclusion. While the others are always troubling you, you can't do it. So this is where this particular verses, so it is mentioned, Eko Chare Kagga Visana Kappu. So one seeing the peril in this association, so now you are trying to live alone. You are trying to live a kind of a solitude. You are trying to live kind of a solitary life. So this is the theme and the two verses that I picked today. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
I'm sorry about that. Currently, there are 7 questions. One second. Question number one, general question. Dear Bhante, last year I had a very consistent practice and quite pleased with the progress and practical understanding I gained under your guidance. Unfortunately, during the last 5 to 6 months, my mindfulness practice was minimal due to various reasons. However, I haven't lost the touch and tried to connect to this program and practice at least once a week. I am determined to practice during the weekdays as well and to adopt a regular timetable. What is Bhante's advice for us to get through this type of ad hoc practice or low period? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, today's Dhamma sermon actually give you some insight, because when you have many responsibilities, when you have sort of many other issues, so you face this problem. So you have many things, and every time, so you are actually trying to deal with a lot of other activities, so that it is difficult for you to continue your practice. So it is kind of a burden, so that actually you are sometimes neglecting your practice. So again, so you come to the root, you come to the zero level. So you have to restart. No other option. So this is something that we all sometimes face. So without continuous practice, it's very difficult to maintain some amount of clarity or some amount of steadiness in the mind. Because if these all the qualities that we are trying to develop are easily slip from the mind. Unlike the unwholesome qualities, all the wholesome qualities require a certain amount of effort to maintain. So if you are discussing Samma Vayama, the fourth aspect of Samma Vayama is called the sustaining of the good qualities that you are developed. Assume that with your effort that you are able to develop a fair amount of good qualities. But if you are not continuing your practice, so those qualities start to fade away. So those start to deteriorate. And now again, when you are starting, you understood, okay, everything has gone. I have to restart. Maybe start from the beginning. So that is where we need to have some sort of a formal practice, daily practice. So irrespective of you have a lot of responsibilities, try to get a maybe early in the morning, just before the, going to the, say, washroom, say, have a kind of a little walking path. Or after having a wash, just going for a walking, just doing for a sitting practice. So likewise, we need to find out ways and means how to maintain our practice. So otherwise, it's very difficult. What we are able to experience start to fade away. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7, general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, this is a Dhamma question in regards to faith and trust. Would you please be able to explain the meaning of Ukappana Shraddha, please? Much merits and appreciation with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, Ukappana Shraddha, I think as far as I can remember, now typically what we have is called at the beginning, what we have is not a really a good faith based on the facts. So we simply have some sort of a faith. We simply have some kind of a faith, which is not actually factual, but because that we being Buddhist, we have some sort of faith on the Buddha. We being Buddhist, we may have some sort of a faith on the Dhamma, to the Sangha, but it is not factual because we ourselves have not experienced anything. But later, and this is sometimes called Amulika Shraddha, where the faith is a kind of a mere faith, which is not strong and which is fragile and which is kind of a, just kind of a belief. But later, the difference in the Buddha's teaching is that you can actually verify this teaching. So there is a path mentioned to practice, and accordingly that assume that you are practicing. And as you are practicing, you yourself start to experience the Buddha's teaching. So now the confidence is growing. Now the trust is growing. Now the faith is growing. And now it is no more a blind belief. Now it becomes what you call akaravati saddha, where the faith becomes sort of a conviction, where you are having a very good understanding. Through that understanding, you get a lot of faith on the Buddha, that he has properly mentioned the Dhamma and he has well explained the Dhamma. It is really beautiful in the middle, beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, beautiful in the end. So you have that very, factual faith when you start your own practice. And that faith actually growing, and there it is called Akaravati Saddha, and it is also called Okappana Saddha, and that is in a way kind of an unwavering kind of a faith, because you yourself know it is not kind of a blind faith. It is not that you are blindly believe. Rather, you yourself have experienced it. Now you have your own experiential knowledge, and which is quite telling with the Buddha's teaching. So therefore, it is called Okappana Saddha. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 7, mindful sitting. Dear Swaminarayan, my sitting practice is mindfulness on breath, and thank you for this program and your guidance throughout this time. During the sitting practice, I often come to a point where the breath becomes subtle and disappears to a widespread awareness. We have been discussing this from the very first sutta, Anapanasati 16 steps, and in many questions and answers. Sometimes the breath appears back, and sometimes the focus shifts to various body sensations or to appearing and disappearing of thoughts. When the breath or any other observation disappears, when I inquire about the state of my mind, this is disappearing or becoming a subtle nature. My attitude seems to be that I'm waiting or looking towards this state. During Nisaranavadiya question and answer sessions, I've heard that Most Venerable Dhammajiva Mahathera asking this crucial question: when the breath disappears, whether we like it or dislike it, what is the significance of this inquiry, and how do we clarify and understand our experience with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, if you are practicing 16 steps of Anapanasati, once the breath disappears, you simply have to maintain your attention closer to the nostril. It is not necessary to change the place. Rather, you keep your attention closer to the nostril. And as you are keeping it further, so there are various sensations start to automatically develop in the body. And that may be kind of a tingling sensation. It may be some sort of goosebumps, or it may be kind of rapturous sensations, pleasurable feelings. So that kind of various feelings start to appear. So it's a kind of a natural evolvement of the practice. Basically, you don't need to purposely do anything, but the practice itself is bringing you to some that kind of experience. So it naturally may happen. So that is where Buddha mentioned Piti Parisangvedi Asasi Samiti Sikkhati Sukha Parisangvedi Asasi Samiti Sikkhati, where you don't need to do any particular thing with the breath. Rather, now the breath actually helped you to refine your attention, refine your mindfulness, to have a concentrated mind. And when you are able to develop your concentration to a particular extent, and the breath completely calms down, it disappeared, and now those sensations start to appear automatically. Now you are in that the Vedananupassana section, Piti Parisangvedi, Sukha Parisangvedi. We are now, you can look at all these pleasurable feelings objectively without attaching to them. Rather, you are looking at them like a third person, outsider, and you are practicing in a way the Vedananupassana. Now, sometimes actually this doesn't happen to certain people. So some actually can naturally grow in this path, and that is we can say as the Anapanasati oriented practice. So you don't need to jump to any other practice. You can simply continue your practice based on Anapanasati. But to certain other practitioners, so this evolvement or this natural manifestation does not happen. So they may sometimes stay it in the breath for long time, but there is no any progress. For them, actually, we can turn the yogi to the what you call the Dhatu Manasikara, element meditation, because you already gain some amount of, say, concentration through the breath practice. And that practice actually can be used to observe various sensations, various touching points already available in the body, and using which you can turn your attention to the element characteristics available in the body, and you now can practice Dhatu Manasikara. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 10, general question. Bhante, I have learned mindfulness practice under your guidance. Thank you for the valuable service. I'm trying to teach my children the same, encourage them to practice with me. Many times I've heard that children excel in mindfulness practice better than adults. Can Bhante explain what areas they are better off? From my own practice, I could broadly divide the scope of practice to 3 parts. Observations, one-pointedness or mind distractions, and reflection and understanding. I would like to try to understand if my 12-year-old is better in all these areas or specifically in one, in general because of the age, so that I can minimize my guidance in those areas. With metta, that's the end of the question.
You are trying to put me in trouble. Now, say, actually, the young ones, only thing is that because of their young age, it may be a little difficult for them to develop certain amount of concentration, because in order to develop some amount of concentration, you need a fair amount of restraint. But on the other hand, they can develop mindfulness if they are enthusiastic about it, and the mindfulness development is quite, interesting. Assume that particularly in the walking meditation, if they are properly guided, they may start to enjoy walking meditation. Rather than sitting, they may sometimes find walking meditation is quite interesting. And once they are able to recognize mindfulness, that can bring to sitting practice, and they now can probably start, say, mindful breathing, rising and falling, or starting to recognize various sensations available throughout the body and keeping attention to the various postures, posture junctions, all these things. And the beauty is, now if they are able to continue this, they can easily have a very clear mind, unlike ourselves. So our minds, adults' minds, are fairly corrupted, fairly congested, fairly polluted with so many things. So for us, it may take fairly long time for us to calm down ourselves, to remove all these past experiences from our minds, and all the signs sedimented in our minds. So that actually takes long time. But since the children's minds are yet still fairly pure, so they may not take long time for them to come to such a pure mind, fairly clear mind, clean mind. So they may achieve it very quickly. But the thing is that since they are not yet convinced about the value of the practice, so they may actually lose it. So they may time to time experience it, but they are not yet fully convinced of the value of their practice. And still, since they are, say, 12 years or something like that, so still they are not yet matured enough to understand the Buddha's teaching in a deep way. So the physical experience or the experiential knowledge tallying with the Buddha's teaching is not yet satisfactory happens. So therefore, they can't understand where their mind resides or what they are really experiencing along with the Buddha's teaching. So that way, actually their experience, they don't feel as something worthy. Say, for example, assume that your child is experiencing some sort of an emptiness in his mind, in or her mind. Suppose that he went through very quickly to that level, and you also understood his concentration is not that good, but he was maintaining a very good of mindfulness, and he is also experiencing some sort of rising and passing away nature, which I am also experiencing. So now he is able to keep his mind empty. So what is the value of this emptiness? Are you able to explain him? Are you able to convince him the value of it? So that is where it is a bit difficult, because it is kind of a deep teaching. And if we are able to fully convince him, then actually they can maintain it for further and further. But on the other hand, when it comes to an adult, so he actually has experienced the life. He went through a lot of difficulties. He went through a lot of, ups and downs of the life. And he recognized the value of the Dhamma. He was quite convinced about the Dhamma. And now he is trying to experience it. Now he is trying to experience it by himself. Now he is practicing. Now time to time he also gets certain understanding, certain insights. And those insights now can easily tallied with the Buddha's teaching, because he is now an adult, a mature person, and already somewhat convinced about the Dhamma. And therefore, when he is gaining some sort of a result, so that result can be easily maintained. I can't say it is easy, but you feel the value of it. You can actually tally your experience with the Buddha's teaching, and someone may even guide you that this is where you are, and this is the value of it, and this has to further develop or something like that. So you may get further convincing advice that the value of your experience is something that you need to maintain, something that you need to further improve. So these are the areas that we can recognize when we are comparing the adult's practice and the children's practice. So the children, though they are able to quickly get results, so if they are not maintaining it, so they again replace it with many other things. So they are learning a lot of other things. They are going to the school, or they are through the distant learning, they are learning a lot of things, and their mind now forgets this experience, what they gained through the mindfulness practice, and they replace that experience with the lot of incoming knowledge, what we call the knowledge, the subject knowledge, and they are again corrupting their mind. So if you are able to advise your child to maintain that quality mind, maintain that pure mind, and you encourage that, and you try to convince him the value of it, it doesn't mean that you are not teaching the other worldly subjects. So you may teach him, true, but at the same time giving some opportunity for him to maintain what he has gained, and slowly paving the way to sort of understand the Buddha's teaching, so that he may slowly understand the value of his level of mind or the experience that he is going through. So then he may not deteriorate. He may not fall down or downfall. And maybe when he is becoming an adult, so he has both. So he's maintaining the good experience that he has already achieved. It is not dropped. It is not deteriorated. And at the same time, as an adult, you have your subject knowledge, you have gained your education, and that is also there. So if one can balance these two, I feel that is something quite challenging. And as a parent, if you can help your child to achieve both goals, then that is a really good achievement. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 10. General question. Dear Bhante, was Maliyadeva Mahathera the last known Arahant in Sri Lanka? What are the distinct characteristics, if one can identify by associating someone for a long time who claims to be an Arahant? That's the end of the question.
I didn't get your chatu properly.
So I'll read it again. Was Maliyadeva Mahathera the last known Arahant in Sri Lanka? What are the distinct characteristics, if one can identify, by associating someone for a long time who claims to be an Arahant? That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Certain monks say that the Sri Lanka is the one who has given such a title that this is the last Arahant. So there is no more future Arahants in Sri Lanka. So this is a kind of a wrong notion. So this is a kind of an argument certain, educated and practice oriented, and even the foreign monks are telling that the Sri Lanka is the only country who has sort of wind up the session. So they didn't expect future Arahants or future whoever the attainments. So they have told that, okay, this is the last person and no more. So this is kind of a detrimental attitude maybe available in Sri Lanka. And as Bhante Dhammajiva mentioned, so this is something that prevailed maybe till 1950s or something. So people were thinking now that Buddha era has gone, no more Arahants, no more practice, and now only you can accumulate merit. So that is the attitude Sri Lanka basically had. But on the other hand, say Thailand, Burma, they actually continue to practice. So they are maybe Arahants, I don't know. But they continue to practice. They didn't consider that the Buddha Sasana has finished. So still something can be gained, still something that they can experience by practicing. So that attitude was there in Thailand and Burma. So as a result, so the Burmese masters start to come to Sri Lanka in 1960s, 1950s, like Mahasi Sayadaw and then the Sayadaw Upandita. So they actually start to come to Sri Lanka and they start to actually restart the practicing oriented Buddhism. So at the parallelly, actually, Mathura Sri Jnanarama Mahathero and various other practice-oriented monks, actually, they also tried to develop. They didn't basically think that this already finished sasana, already ended sasana, but rather they felt, okay, this is still possible to practice. So now these two traditions get together, and that is how the Protestant tradition regained in the 1950s, and they started kind of a practice-oriented monkhood, practice-oriented, culture. And that is also now thriving in Sri Lanka. And therefore, we can't say actually, even nowadays Sri Lanka has many Arahants, probably you might have heard. I don't know whether you believe it or not. Anyway, we can keep an open mind rather than thinking that it's all gone, all finished. But especially with the Maliyadeva Maharathan Vahanse, is that we can say that I heard that he is the last one who is with this, when one becomes an Arahant, there may be certain other qualifications or other qualities that one can gain. Even during the Buddha's period, there are many Arahants who didn't have, psychic powers. There are many Arahants who didn't have what you call the jhana, certain direct knowledges, like abhinya. Says many Arahants were there who didn't have pubbe nivasa anusajnana, that the recollection of the past lives, they didn't have. And they didn't have the qualification to read others' mind. So they didn't have any capacity to see how other beings are rising and passing from one birth to the other birth. So they didn't have the clairvoyance, the divine eye. So likewise, so these are certain special skills that the monks may gain, and it may sometimes those skills are there even with the worldly monks, not with the arahants. So if an arahant have these skills, special skills, so then he is sometimes called as an arahant with that three types of special skills. And this Maliyadeva Maharathan Vahanse is, I heard, is such an arahant who had all these skills. So it may be true that he may be the last arahant who basically combined all these. So arahanthood as well as all that other external skills that what we are discussing were gained by Maliyadeva Maharathan Vahanse. Maybe other arahants later available in Sri Lanka, but don't know, and maybe available in other countries as well, probably not that accomplished. But it doesn't mean that the Buddha's teaching is now not at the level of practicing. So there are, Buddha has very sort of categorically mentioned that if one is continuing to practice, and if one is continuing to develop vipassana, if one is continuing to develop sila, morality, so his sasana is not, his sasana is not empty of the arahants. So he actually encouraged, therefore, monks, nuns, lay people to practice, so that he may, or whoever practicing diligently may be able to experience his teaching. So that is where actually we have to follow.
Question number 6 of 10, general question. Theran Sarnai, Venerable Bhante, I thought for all this time when I meditate, I'm mindful about the objective when I really feel that and not thinking about any other thing. I have these questions. Number one, are we mindful when we don't think? I mean, when we feel the objective and really don't think about any other thing at the same time, are we mindful? Number two, even if we think about some other thing, does the mindfulness break? Number three, does this state called not thinking mean mindfulness all the time? Thank you. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, we can answer like this. Now, basically, if you are knowingly thinking, then we can say you are mindfully thinking. Suppose you want to think about the past. You have to learn about the past. You need to reflect about the past. But you know very well, now I am thinking about the past. And while thinking also, you understand that. You know that I am thinking. I am thinking about the past. I am remembering something about happened in the past. So that way, you are well established in the present moment. And you know very well what the mind is doing. Similarly, assume that you need to design something. You need to plan something, which is actually the mind oriented, and you mentally do it, you project it, you think about it, plan about it, yet you are established very well in the present moment. And you know very well, now I am planning. So this way, you can think while being mindful. Assume now you don't want to think. Now you have finished your job. Now you should be able to calm down the mind. Now you are not thinking. Now you are not driven by anything. Now you are not driven by past remembering. You are not driven by any future, designing, planning, because you have finished it. Now your ambition, now your desire is to keep yourself quiet. Assume now you are able to do it. Because no point of thinking right now. That is not necessary. So you are able to keep your mind calm. Now no thoughts in the mind. So this is what Buddha appreciated. Now if you refer a sutta called Vitakka Santana Sutta, available in the Majjhima Nikaya, Very beautifully Buddha mentioned this. So Buddha mentioned, whenever you want to think, you are thinking. Whenever you want not to think, you are not thinking. Suppose you have eyes. Now using your eyes, now you can watch something. And now you are seeing. You are using your eyes, now you are seeing. Suppose now you read a book and you have seen the content. And now you want to finish it. Now you want to keep the book away. And now you want to close your eyes. Now nothing is seen. Now you have closed your eyes. Now you are. So in the eye faculty, you have this control ability. So you, whenever it is necessary, you are looking using your eyes. And when it is not necessary, you are keeping your eyes closed. At that time, nothing is there. And your eyes are closed, not functioning. Now, similarly, can you do the same thing for your mind? When it is necessary, you are using your mind faculty to think about something useful. And when it is not necessary, you are keeping your mind quiet, quite silent. So the thoughts are not an essential part of the mind. So this is something that we need to understand. So we typically have the kind of a traditional belief that the mind means thinking. But on the opposite, there is a mind free from thinking. That is where Buddha mentioned that there is a samadhi, for example, which is with vitakka and vichara, which has kind of a activation in the mind, again and again applying the mind to a particular object. So this is kind of a little disturbance in the mind. But then Buddha mentioned there is a samadhi which is free from this applied mind. So mind is quite stable and mind stay quite focused on a particular place. And it is quite stable. It is rigid in a way. It is unwavering, quite stable. So it doesn't necessary to have any thought at all. Does it mean that your mind loses the investigative quality? What do you think? Suppose you are observing something through a microscope and you are keeping it under the lens. And do you really need to have kind of a disturbance in order to experience it, to investigate it? Or when you have a very quiet, silent, but kind with a very investigative approach, that you can do the experiment or this use of the microscope. I think the second approach is the best. So that is where Buddha mentioned. So while you do your practice slowly, you may come to this second level where you are maintaining a very quiet mind, which is free from thinking, but have a very good vigilance, have an investigative approach. The mind has some sort of a curiosity. At that time, actually, the possibility is there for various insights, the personal knowledges. So mindfulness is in a very higher state at that level. So the mind is quite awakened at that time. So if you are thinking that the thoughts are not there, so you are not mindful. So it is a wrong idea. Yeah.
Bhante, we actually have maybe 4 more questions. Is it okay if we go over time?
We'll take one maybe then.
Okay, one. All right. This is a quick one. Question number 7, general question. Dear Bhante, the special practices mentioned during the Dhamma talk, Dhutanga, by practicing monks, are these to tackle deeply rooted tendencies for anusaya? That's the end.
Yeah, we can say in some sense. So Buddha mentioned actually Dhutanga is basically to remove defilements. So suppose you feel that you are a greedy character and you honestly understood that you are greedy on food. And so there you are trying to tame your mind by using a single meal rather than having 2 meals. Now as monks, so typically they have the breakfast and the lunch, what you call here, the morning meal and the say before the noon. And suppose that one particular monk recognized now he's too much greedy and he want to tame the mind. So he may take the one meal practice. So likewise, so depending on the character, depending on your defilements, you can select these Dutanga practices, and that in a way helps to sort of tame the mind, to cut off the defilements in a way, in a little rigid manner. So different approaches are there in the Buddha's teaching to so tame the mind. So this is one approach. Yeah. So what are the other questions, Chatu? Probably we can quickly go through.
Okay. All right. They're quite small questions. Okay. Okay. Question number 8, general question. I have heard the word Balava Vipassana in Dhamma talks. Could you please explain it with an example? That's the end of the question.
So different terms are there. Actually, I need to refresh my mind on those terms, because when it comes to Udayavya, rising and passing away knowledge, the very first level is called Taruna Udayavya, where it is not yet mature enough. But when it is growing to high extent, it is called Balava Udayavya, Balava Vipassana. So it is gaining or momentum, and there may be certain other distinctions I need to check and see to give you a very precise answer.
Question number 8. 9. General question. Dear Bhante, can you please explain the significance of dana after someone has passed away? Why do we give it 7 days, 3 months, and a year after a person has passed away? Much merits for your answer. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a tradition coming with the culture and all these things. And there are certain beliefs as well rooted into this. And certain incidents also happened during the Buddha's time even, that sometimes monks are asked to not to distribute belongings of a certain deceased monk till 7 days are gone. So likewise, these things may have some sort of a valid ground when it is calling 7 days almsgiving or 3 months almsgiving. But anyway, it has become some sort of a tradition and might or might not have strong reasons. And on the other hand, we can give dana, these donations, at any given time, and you can pass merits to the other person. So there is no any restrictions in giving something to another person, and you share that merit with anyone else. So there is no any restrictions. But this has become some sort of a custom in Sri Lanka and maybe in the other Buddhist countries.
Question number 10, last one. Dear Bhante, based on the Dhamma sermon, what advice would we give for someone working in a very busy and high-pressure environment, for example, managing the COVID response? Many of my colleagues in this role are drained from months of working. I notice they cannot even smile. I admire their hard work but worry about their well-being. How can they maintain and protect their well-being while on and off the job? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, so that is where actually we need to have some time for ourselves. So if we think our job is our life, so then it is kind of a mistaken belief as far as I can say, because actually, we need to honestly do our job, but still have to maintain limits. Because, you know, if we are drained out, if we are sort of burned, and then you can't perform well. So in order to perform well, you need to have clarity of your mind. You need to have kind of a refreshness of your mind. And then only you can have a clear picture about what you are going to do. And again and again, if you are sort of, working hard throughout the day and not taking any break, so ultimately you feel exhausted and then you can't work properly and your mind may not give the best results. So time to time, the mind has to give a proper relaxation. like we sleep. Say we, our body has requires certain relaxation, resting period. So we give that, we try to give that using our sleep. So at least say 5-6 hours sleep is needed. So that is the time the mind and the body get refreshed. So similarly, during your job also, you need to have some sort of a breaking time, kind of a vacation. Otherwise, you can't perform well. So therefore, don't think that doing the job 7 days, 365 days is the proper approach. Rather, time to time taking a break is useful to you even for the job, for your occupation. That's what I feel the best approach.
That's the end of the questions today, Bhante. So I'd just like to wrap up. I'd like to thank Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program and also to pass on our merits, as well as to the people organizing and also those seen and unseen participating. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, there would be no program. Teruan Sanai.
Yeah, Teruan Sanai. Teruan Sanai.